In tech, we suck.
In tech, we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 102 of the In Tech, We Trust podcast. And there's me, Nigel Poulton. There is drumroll Mark Farley. Hello, Mark. Hey. And there is Yay Dean. Woo, yay.
Bienvenidos la gente de America.
Oh, okay.
Ooh.
I'm impressed. What does that mean?
That just means welcome, people of America.
Oh, man.
You know, what I said meant the same thing.
Yeah, I know. You were just speaking Klingon.
Very good. Well, I'll tell you what, why don't we give a warm welcome and an In Tech We Trust round of applause to a guest that we've got on this week, Alex Galbraith.
Who dat?
I was going to say, hey now, but I am Scottish, so I suppose it would have to be, hey nu.
We could do some Swedish nu.
I guess the only test is, how do you pronounce Azure?
Oh, we go with the good old Azure as well, because we take it from the...
You listen to his podcast too, you Dean.
Yeah, I just listened to the first one. Good stuff. Good stuff.
And Alex actually did correct himself when he said Azure, and he said, I mean, Azure or something like that. And Alex, you should tell people what your podcast is.
Yes.
Pimp it out.
Yeah, we literally had our first episode last week, and it's going pretty well. So we're calling it the Open Tech Cast, and it came from the Open Home Lab site, wiki site that we started fairly recently based on something we did out of a vMug. Where people can come along and put updates about their home labs and tips and bits and pieces on there. So highly recommend people check out openhomelab.org and opentechcast.com.
Alex, who is we when you say we?
So we've got a bunch of guys from the UK, myself, Amit Panchal, Gareth Edwards and Kev Johnson. We basically all attend the UK and London VMUGs on a regular basis. And so we thought it was a bit of a random Twitter conversation one night, and it just kind of ended up being what it is.
Nice. Well, now you have a very high bar set, Alex. So you've got nowhere to go but down from here. So yeah. You got to bring it.
I think I've always mispronounced your name. Speaking of mispronunciations, I've pronounced it Galbraith, but it's Galbraith.
That's the one, yeah. Bit like J.K. Galbraith, the economist.
Well, I'm going to have to do some digging there, I guess, but I'll try to remember that.
So, Alex, what's the plan for producing the podcast? So how often do we expect, how long do we expect each episode to be? Am I right in guessing that it's going to be like a VM-type infrastructure focus?
No, pretty broad, actually. So we're trying to keep it, well, we're all pretty busy guys, so we're not even remotely coming close to what you guys will do with your weekly cast. But we reckon if we aim for a month to start off with, that'll be a good start, and if we can do it consistently. And in terms of how broad it'll go, it literally will go everything from, you know, VMware, Hyper-V, storage, compute, you know, et cetera, right through to cloud. Because, you know, we start with the concept of a home lab, but what is a home lab these days, and who really necessarily wants to run it in your own home? So, yeah, hopefully we'll move with the times and we won't just be saying, yeah, it's got to stay on-prem and on tin.
Very cool. So should we start talking about our agenda for this week then, gentlemen?
Get up.
What have we got? All right, so, oh, good grief. We've got more airline check-in system crashes. We've got autonomous vehicles that come with a driver and an engineer. We've got wearable tech on the decline, networking salaries on the rise, delayed supercomputers, and we've got a bike story in the tech section. In more business-related stuff, though, there's things like, oh, there's the closure of the Dell EMC deal. We've got companies issuing takedown orders against their own websites. Sadly, we've got colleges closing, we've got massive retrospective tax bills, and we've got the expansion of Microsoft Cloud Services further into, I think, a Brexiting United Kingdom. So I think we've got maybe quite a lot of stuff on the menu here. I don't know, how's about first up, maybe we hit this airline story. Maybe we don't spend ages on it, because we seem to have had loads of these recently. But, Yadin, I know you've got a few comments to give us on this. Why don't you just, before you give your thoughts on it, just give us maybe a rundown of, you know, who's in the crosshairs this time around and what have you.
Oh, yeah, this is British Airways, and they had a couple hours delay. And so it sounds like, you know, there was these cataclysmic, you know, failures on the part of airlines, and I think there's more of a piling on now. I think now if there's, like, any delay of, like, 15 to 20 minutes, like, it's going to become, like, national or international news. So I don't think the British are, Airways are really actually doing anything too bad on this. But what happened was is there was an IT glitch, as they call it, quote-unquote. I love that when broad terms like IT glitch are used. But basically they were doing an upgrade to their check-in system, and there was a problem with the upgrade. And the first thing I thought is, you know what? You know, I bet everything would run way better if they were just using Docker. What do you think, Nigel?
I don't know about that. I'll tell you what my first thought was. Nobody upgrade air traffic control. Because I'm telling you, right, it's one thing for check-in systems to go down and to crash. Of course, it's another thing for aircrafts themselves to crash, obviously. But I'm like, who would dare, or who would even take the contract to upgrade a major air traffic control system with the kind of risks that come with that? I mean, this, so I think, you know, some background to this, I don't know the detail on it, right? But British Airways have been in the process of implementing a new back-end check-in system. I think it's called Fly. And my goodness, they have been working on this and implementing it for heaven knows how long now. And it can't cut the mustard, so it seems. I don't know why people take on these projects anymore, you know, both from a company that supplies the new systems to the airlines themselves. That, I mean, do we just write crapper software these days? Or is it that we build them on crapper flakier systems? Do we need to go back to iSeries and mainframes and stuff?
No, we build them on systems that weren't built for the kinds of queries that we give them, right? We want to provide consumers with that, you know, the mobile access to all this information, and the systems behind it really weren't built for that. They were built for reservation agents, not for the public's, you know, wanting to get, you know, like the Uber look and feel for airline information.
Yeah, because you don't see these same problems happening in the financial sector. You see a lot of migration to much more sophisticated infrastructure when you look at, you know, running the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ. Airlines don't have that same value prop, so you're not going to see that wholesale migration to sort of the latest and greatest. And financial institutions are always on the bleeding edge of, you know, what they're investing in for infrastructure. And unlike financial airlines, they just try and hold on to things as long as possible. And that includes, you know, their airplanes. It includes like the seats that you sit on. And some planes that seem to be far older than the actual plane itself. And that just goes to show how they're trying. They have just razor-thin margins, and just intense competition constantly. So it's no surprise that infrastructure is crumbling, and everything they build on top of it is just going to get worse and worse until they start addressing the underlying issues.
But, you know, the type of information that is presented now to customers is, you know, something that used to be on a terminal, and there might be separate systems for doing that. But there's just no way to provide the kind of user experience that people want with the back-end systems that they have. So, you know, when you do an upgrade, there's probably things like application dependencies now for the new model of user access that don't work, that break, and then, you know, hell breaks loose. I'm not saying that this is a case where it's just end user stuff that didn't work. I mean, the check-in, the way I understand it, the check-in application failed to work, but there was probably something in there that had been shoehorned in, you know, over the last decade or so that, oops, you know, didn't consider that during the upgrade.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of good intending, you know, men and women that work, you know, within the IT departments for airlines too, but I just imagine they've just been set up for failure. I don't know why anyone take a job in that industry. It just seems like you're just building the best. You're just doing the best you can to build on top of, you know, of something that's crumbling underneath you constantly.
So. Well, Yadin, I'm looking for work. I mean, I'm actually...
There you go. You can apply for a job at British Airways.
I don't think you want to take that, Mark. let's maybe pivot on to something else that we've talked about quite a lot recently. But there's been another story in the news about autonomous cars. And actually, I'm starting to kind of doubt the term autonomous cars, right? Because the more and more stories that come out and more I read into them, these cars are less autonomous than they are autonomous, I think. So Uber are trialing, I think, is it in Pittsburgh maybe?
Yeah.
Some autonomous Uber cabs or whatever, except, wait a minute.
Semi-autonomous.
come off it. So you order an Uber today, right? And it comes with a driver. Nothing that says autonomous or anything like that. You order an autonomous Uber in Pittsburgh, and you get a driver and an engineer. That's less than semi-autonomous. That's less autonomous than having a driver. That's like freaking backwards.
No, you need somebody in QA. Real time. I can understand, you know, piloting this is just like, there's no way that any city in the United States would ever green light a fully autonomous vehicle without, you know, a human driver there making sure that it was doing well until it passed some certain, you know, level of, you know, of safety record. And even then, it's going to be years before that fully autonomous vehicle is just going to show up without a driver at all. But I know you are looking forward to that day when you're downtown London and you want to hail, you know, an autonomous Uber, and you just slide in and there's nobody there. Nobody to chit-chat with, nobody to ask you how you're doing, ask you about the weather. You just decide where your destination is and the car comes pick you up and it just takes you there and there's no human interaction whatsoever. Am I right, Nigel?
You're right, but you know what I'm after more? I'm after a car that my daughters don't have to learn to drive, because I want them to be safer, but I want me and other drivers to be safe from them too.
So really, you're defending us against horrible drivers.
Yes.
I think actually the bigger challenge probably for Uber is going to be possibly putting things like biological detectors in the back of those cabs, because you think about London on a Friday and Saturday night, you don't necessarily want your Uber turning up with some unwelcome surprises in the back. So actually, if they want to go fully autonomous at that stage, they're going to need a lot more than just an automated driver.
Alex, what are you talking about? I don't get it.
I'm thinking Uber has another line of business here. Fully autonomous cars that just cruise around the city while people use the back seats for quote-unquote other activities.
They could combine Airbnb and Uber in that case.
Oh, there you go.
Pick you up from the airport and they just keep driving around all night long. And you've got a night stay. Plus you've got, you know, transportation at the same time. See there? Alex, you see, you can't put these ideas out on a podcast. This is pro tip, right? You have to patent the stuff before it goes on a podcast so people can't monetize it.
See, I think it's you guys with the mucky minds. You see, I was just thinking about having a few too many lemonades, but...
I'm not having that, coming from a Scot.
let me actually pivot to a very serious note, though, because imagine, I mean, the biodetection actually is a very good point, because imagine that if you wanted to deliver an incendiary device or a bomb, you could actually put it in the back of an Uber, an autonomous vehicle, give it a destination, and have it drive there uninterrupted, unimpeded, and explode it at will. And this is just a sort of a disaster.
You are so going to prison, Yadin. The first time one of these things blows up, they're coming to get you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, no, I'm just covering myself right now. I'm like, oh, yeah, why would I, you know, put this out on a podcast if I was going to do it myself? But no, I think there's a huge concern about that, you know, or delivering packages or people delivering stuff that, you know, you normally wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't want to deliver. You want to deliver anonymously. And it could just be something, you know, as benign, you know, as less benign as or as drugs or something like that. And you want an Uber driver to go from X to Z. You don't want it to get stopped. Put some drugs in the trunk, have it go to, you know, destination B and have the other person pick up, and, you know, have dummy accounts for, you know, for the Uber. I'm coming up with all this stuff, man. Bitcoin in the back end.
A Bitcoin in the back end. That sounds bad too.
Yeah. This is just going sideways, isn't it?
Yeah. I want to look at this term they're using in, you know, in Pittsburgh, that you're going to have a non-driving driver and an engineer. I mean, is that a new euphemism for voyeur?
I mean, stop! No.
But surely that's all just a bit of a storm in a teacup, realistically. You know, it's only going to be a matter of a couple of years before, you know, the engineer exits the vehicle, and then maybe they hold on to the drivers for another couple of years, and then, you know, eventually they're going to disappear as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, this, I think, is just more of taking more power away from the individual, so we can take, you know, instead of having just that little bit of plot profit they have when they're doing the drivers, you know, rideshare, just taking all the profit. But yes, you know, and then the problem then says, well, now you own a fleet of cars, which Uber's never done before. You know, Uber's not a fleet of car owner. And they say they've got a way around that. So, like, maybe not. So maybe somebody else, they'll be contracting out with another firm that all they do is create autonomous vehicles, and Uber just happens to contract out with them to supply those vehicles, even they don't own them. They're just contracting out with a third party. So I think it's some interesting things in the way this is going to develop, and we're going to see something emerge that's unlike the experience that we have right now with the taxi cabs, you know, in front of the convention center in Las Vegas, which I cannot stand them.
So I tell you what, let's pivot quickly then, and we'll rattle through the rest of the tech news. So Fujitsu made this big announcement a few weeks ago, a new supercomputer, I think like 20 times faster than the current one that's in China, I think. It's called Post-K, but the cool thing that I think most of us thought was it's going to be based on ARM chips rather than PowerPC. And it's got some kind of, I should know what the name was, but the name of this supercomputer had 2020 as part of the name, and it was obviously due to be released in 2020. But now they're saying it's going to be delayed until 2022. So I don't know if they need to rename it or what, but they're saying that the issue is they need more time to revise and test the ARM chips.
So wait, this doesn't even exist for another 6 years?
It doesn't know.
Yeah. This is like NASA when they send probes to other planets in the solar system. You don't need to announce a supercomputer this far in advance. I'm sorry.
I thought it like puts EMC to shame. You know, they usually pre-announce stuff hideously far in advance. And this takes the biscuit, this does. But so it was originally announced to be 4 years away. And now it's already been pushed like 1, maybe 2 years. It's like, But I wonder, so, you know, we talked about airlines and them trying to get all modern with new applications and new user experiences and stuff when the old stuff just worked. Is, I guess, Fujitsu here at a risk of trying to be a little bit too bleeding edge and a little bit too cool by going with ARM? Should they have just stuck with, like, some ancient processor that they got out of, like, the old space shuttles or something? Because, damn it, I'm sure that would have worked and probably shipped on time. I don't know. Maybe they're just trying to be too cool going with ARM. Maybe it was too soon to take, like, I don't know, what seems like a mobile technology chip and shoehorn it into supercomputers. Don't know. Does anybody have anything to say on that? And I really don't care if we don't, because I'm far from an expert on it. Tumbleweeds. All right, then. Tell you what, let's move on then. So wearable technology is on the decline. For something to be on the decline, I'm sure by definition it has to have been on the rise or on the up in the past. I've personally never worn any wearable tech. Anybody on the podcast with me right now ever worn wearable tech? And if you have, do you still wear it now and do you think it's any good?
Well, I think there's one thing that everyone wears that might be not considered as wearable tech, but it is the first entrance, and that those are sort of like the Fitbits of the world, the GPS watches of the world, which are in wide adoption or mass adoption. And so these things have incredible utility. I use mine for running, and it has a very, very specific focus. It does one thing. It tracks where I go, it tracks how fast I'm running, and it gives me a couple stats and then automatically uploads that information to the cloud. Now, the thing is that when you move into the what's called really wearable, truly wearable smart tech, which is what I think you're really referring to and what's reported to be on the decline, you are correct. That was never really that popular or widely adopted. I would say that we're probably more, you know, in the trough of disillusionment within the Gartner hype cycle rather than the curve of enlightenment or what comes after the trough. Maybe we're not even to the trough yet.
Do you think, though, that like with Fitbit and iWatches or Apple Watches, these companies are just going to run into the same issue that Apple seemed to be coming into these days, which is, everybody went out and bought an iPad, but now everybody's got an iPad, and maybe it's only an iPad 2 or an iPad 3, but it does the job. And so they had a massive big spike in sales, but then those sales over time are beginning to decline. And, you know, with a smaller number of people that tend to maybe want to buy these kind of devices, they're going to run out of that runway a lot sooner.
Now, I think if you take a look at the stock of Garmin, that is most definitely not the case. And it was great how they pivoted from being like this, turn-by-turn direction company to being a wearable company. And Garmin as a brand within the fitness community is just phenomenally huge. And people buy, sometimes they buy 2 watches a year. I kid you not. Now, this is in the Bay Area. Things are a little bit warped in our little bubble here, but we do adopt the latest and greatest. And when Garmin comes out with something new, and Timex has one, Motorola came out with one for a while. These things get adopted quite rapidly, and it's not one of the things that you buy and you just use and it sort of chugs on. You actually upgrade because the cost is relatively low, and there's no friction to adopting another one because it fits in your same habit. So they're not facing the same company that are the same issues that companies like Apple are, simply because they're serving a much different need. They're doing a much different job. The Apple Watch is trying to do something wholly and completely different, and they will be successful at a certain point. But two things have to happen. One, the price point has to come down. And two, some of the features like the ones that were just put in, like GPS natively in the watch, you have to carry your phone along with you to go for a run, because going for a run with iPhone 6 Plus, let me tell you, not fun. Okay? I want it to have GPS natively in the watch. Once those things are in the watch and you have a much more seamless and more complete user experience, and it does the job of, let's say, something very simple like a Garmin GPS watch for running, then you're going to get a much wider adoption. But right now, you don't have those things in place.
Sounds like Mark needs to come up with some more Windows Phone apps for exercise where you can attach a brick to it.
They will have an Apple Watch app besides Pokemon Go, which was announced today, I guess, with the new watch. It's going to have a Pokemon Go app with the new Apple Watch.
Now that you can say is on the decline, Pokemon Go, but we won't even go there. Let's not go there.
Mark, I want to know, have you worn a wearable device and do you wear one now?
No, unless you count my underwear.
Got technology in there that you want to tell us about, do you?
I don't think there's anything in there. I don't think there's any chips down there.
Yeah, so I've got a. I'll hold my hand up.
But there's software.
They're soft, did you say?
My goodness.
Yeah. So I've never worn a wearable, and it's never appealed to me. And you know what I think overall? That we're too early into this market, and I half wonder whether Apple might end up being the BlackBerry of wearable tech. You know, maybe in 10 years' time when Garmin or whoever it is that's like the new king of wearable tech, and we'll have Apple pulling a BlackBerry and, you know, pulling out ancient patents and things saying, you've stolen this from us, from our Apple Watch that never worked and never took off and stuff like that. I don't know. Could be totally wrong about that, but... Tell you what, let's switch towards business news. But before we do that, something that is not on the decline but is on the rise. If you work in networking, your salary is about to go north. Anyway, shall we pivot on to business news? So the Dell EMC deal, apparently it closes today, or I should say the day that we're recording the podcast on, which is like Wednesday the 7th of September. I thought that was never going to happen. Now, we're a little bit short on time here, right? So can I just go around everybody on the podcast? Mark, I'll hit you first, right? We've asked this question loads of times before, right? But the deal has closed. The Chinese have given it the all clear. Thanks very much for that. Predictions, good thing or bad thing for Dell long term, Mark? Good or bad?
Good. They got this deal done in a hurry with favorable terms, amazingly favorable terms. I think it's good for them. Mm-hmm. I didn't think they were going to get it done. I thought they were going to have a lot of problems with it. I thought it was going to cost a lot more. I'm amazed.
I think it's fair to say they did have their challenges along the way, right, with the VMware stock and with all the issues in raising the capital and stuff.
But, they had SEC issues. Yeah. They had all sorts of antitrust issues that, you know, they had a lot of regulatory hurdles to go over.
So I think we should probably congratulate them in actually getting the deal over the line. Mark, you think it's a positive thing for the future. I disagree with you there. I cannot see this being good going forward, but that's just me. Eugene, you think it's good or bad for them in the long term?
Oh, yeah. For Michael Dell, I think it's going to be a phenomenal deal. I think it's going to be bad for a whole lot of salespeople, a whole lot of ops people, a lot of people in HR, a lot of people in other departments that are just going to get axed because of the overlay and some of the cutting that's going to come across. And, you know, we thought some of the other layoffs were going to be bloody. This is going to be really bloody and really confusing. And the messaging is not going to be clear and it's not going to be handled well. And a lot of people who are already, you know, in that situation thinking that this might happen or see the writing on the wall or already have one foot out the door. So I think you're already getting dysfunction with the organization because you've got somebody, I've got a situation in which there's an unsettled population of employees who don't know what's going to happen next. And some messages have been pitched to them from a really wonderful leadership marketing, you know, perspective, but they don't actually know what's going to happen next. I mean, I've talked to specific people within the whole federation, the EMC Federation, it's now been acquired. And they've heard word zero. They have no idea what's going to happen. I mean, the only thing they've heard, you know, read is that, you know, that Dell's going to take all of their MacBook Pros away and replace them with Dell laptops. And but they still haven't gotten official word on when that's going to happen or how it's going to happen. But you know what? The thing that interests me the most on this, too, just to totally not answer your question at all, Nigel, but is the Pivotal piece and how the Pivotal IPO is actually going to complicate the Dell acquisition of EMC Federation even more. Now, I know that they're not a whole, you know, wholly owned, you know, piece of EMC. They've got investment from other, you know, other people like Microsoft even. But the IPO is going to be very, very interesting with Pivotal, especially only being a three-year-old company and almost being born like right before, you know, this happened. I'm really interested to see what happens to Pivotal and how that gets spun in or spun out, what they do with that. Because I think that's one of the most valuable properties, honestly, from a future perspective. I think Pivotal is one of those valuable properties that Dell got out of this for basically nothing.
We need to talk about that on another podcast then.
Oh, yeah.
Alex?
Bring it.
So,
bring it.
Good or bad from you?
I think it's pretty good, actually. I guess I'll keep it brief, but one way of looking at it is maybe kind of strength in numbers. I think maybe they're banding together and kind of rounding up the wagons for the future fight. Because, you know, the vast majority of IT spend today is still in-house, isn't it? So they've probably got a good few years yet to come up with a kind of winning strategy. And in the meantime, they've got a lot of revenue between those organizations to be able to maintain things in the short to medium term.
All right, that's your opinion. So it's a dead tie. Two think it's good, two think... Actually, what did you say? You didn't...
Oh, I think it's good for some, bad for others. So for Dell, I think this is great for Dell.
Bad for
customers, everyone in the AMC Federation, I don't think it's good for them.
Okay, fair play.
So there you go, Nigel. 3-1, you lose.
So Dell gets to be a bigger and bigger company, and big companies tend to struggle with things. So one big company that struggled with things recently, quite laughable, Warner Brothers, issued takedown requests against their own sites for hosting illegal, I guess, movies and stuff like that. What kind of a joke?
Are they trying
that?
To, like, go for the right to be forgotten or something?
Maybe they are. You know, it's the ultimate... That is pretty good, actually. But the thing is, right, they're so focused these days on trying to stop people getting to... I don't think illegitimate is the right word, right? But non-legitimate content... But by doing this, and of course it was a mistake, right? For me, it's such a characteristic of large companies that cannot get their act together.
So it's interesting, right? They, in trying to prevent things like piracy, you know, they shut down access to their own stuff, which is just going to drive people to want to get pirated copies. I mean, what the hell is that?
Okay, so it's been a car crash of an episode so far. No pun really intended there. But go on, let's try and wind this out with something a little better. Yudin, you're going to do a hot or not for us this week.
All right, so this is my first hot or not segment since Lawrence isn't here. So hot or not, today, Apple announced, among other things, iOS 10, the new Apple Watch, but also the iPhone 7. So we're just going to focus on that one, the iPhone 7. Now, there's a lot of interesting things about this, and I know you guys are all amazing Apple lovers, so I'm expecting hots, screaming hots from all of you. Nigel, I'm going to start with you, because I know the hottest is going to come from you. Nigel, iPhone 7, hot or not?
The fact that it's like version 7, talk about flogging a dead horse. The thing that everybody's talking about is the fact that they've taken the headphone jack out. I mean, what has the world come to when that's the biggest story at Apple's, like... major worldwide developer conference or whatever it is. Apple, it is time to shut down the iPhone division. It has had its day. Market share is on the decline. Put the business unit and the world out of its misery.
Don't hold back. Tell us what you really feel, Nigel.
No, yeah. Yeah. Blackberries. That's the future.
Like, oh, that's right. Everything, just let's spin up some RIN servers and a Docker container and let's get everything back, you know, on BlackBerry. So I'm getting a sense that you're cool. You're cool on this.
I'm stone cold.
Always Windows Phone.
So, Mark.
Oh, yes.
So, Mark, since I know you're an Apple fanboy too, Mark, what do you think of this iPhone 7? Hot or not?
I'm going to read something that I read online, which I think really probably summarizes it. It was Payne over the Lightning port, using the Lightning port. And this appeared on Quartz. So I'm plagiarizing something that Quartz put up, which is, I'm trying to see who the author was, Michael L. from Northeast, whatever that means. And highlighted in blue, it says, "Now I hear that you're going to have to use the Lightning port to listen to music because they're getting rid of the headphone jack. No way. I'll never have another iPhone. I hate using it to charge. I can't imagine using it to listen to music or how quickly, with as much music as I listen to, that I'll wear out the connectors. And no, I'm not interested in Bluetooth headsets. I have enough stuff to charge all the time without my headphones being another item." What another thing that I read on Twitter was, we wanted wireless charging, and what we got was wireless headphones. Too bad, Apple. No, your fanboys are still going to love it, but I think they really blew it.
So I'm getting some coolness from you too, Mark. Not totally cold, but maybe not totally hot. So you're in the middle. So all right, so
just a little ice cold.
So you're in the middle. You're on the fence here. Nigel's on the fence. He's not too sure about it. He doesn't know how he feels. Alex, hot or not? iPhone 7.
So not hot. So I was on holiday last week, right? And I was reading this quite fascinating book called The Second Machine Age. I highly recommend it if anybody's interested in reading it. But it had a whole section in the book that talks about how most new ideas are basically recombinations of existing ones. And I think Apple in the past were famous for their mastery of like recombining and improving on existing tech. You know, the iPhone wasn't necessarily a brand new invention. It was a combination of a bunch of other good tech, but it wasn't necessarily, you know, they weren't packaged the right way. So Apple did a brilliant job of putting that all together. But, you know, of late, I think the last few iterations have just been a bit meh, you know, like, you know, making them uber skinny. You know, it seems pretty pointless if all people do is put a big, massive, chunky phone cover on to protect them. Regarding the headphone thing, you know, people just don't want yet another device to have to keep charge. Bluetooth headsets have been around for years, but plenty of people still plug in, even though they don't, you know, even though Bluetooth's better because it eliminates cables. So why do they do it? Or why don't they do it? Because, you know, they can't be asked charging yet more devices or have them run out of battery, you know, halfway through a flight and you don't have a replacement. And the whole waterproofing thing, quite useful, but, you know, they say it only goes to a meter depth, and that's probably like static pressure. So what happens when you drop it in the toilet?
You know, how deep's your toilet?
Is it the kind of thing you're going
to fish it out?
You're going to want to use it.
Fish it out. All right. Well, so I got a couple on the fences, and you're saying not hot here. And the other two guys are. So I'm sorry. Thank you, gentlemen, for playing hot or not today, but you are all wrong. You're all completely wrong. This is so incredibly hot. And for all the right reasons. And just let me just debunk some of these straw man arguments that you guys are making against the iPhone. Okay, sorry, Bluetooth headsets. Integrated far more seamless and frictionless than any other Bluetooth, you know, pairing that you could possibly have.
Well, if it's frictionless, it's going to fall out of your ear.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. No friction whatsoever, so you won't even feel it, Nigel, when it falls out of your ear. So there. But no, the no longer a mechanical button for the home button. There's a lot of innovation going on there, my friends. But just let me just pose this question to the listeners of In Tech We Trust. Thank you for the fact that you are still listening right now. So what was the big announcement this year that came out of the Android ecosystem? Guys, what was the big smashing innovation from Samsung, from HTC, from Huawei?
The fact that they are crushing Apple in market share.
Crickets. market share. And that is actually the one point that I think is actually worth talking about, because you're not going to make it. I had an exchange with Benedict Evans today on his coverage of, you know, of the Apple iPhone announcement too. And he made a great point. And, you know, I was like, oh, well, this is not, the iPhone is great, but why, but how is this going to further, you know, penetration to the sub-Saharan African market? And he's like, I'm sorry, but we've already got the $30 Android for that. Exactly. And the process innovation that's happening in China with Huawei is going to crush the iPhone in a lot of markets. And the Android operating system and the way that it's developed is going to crush Apple system's ecosystem for certain use cases. But as far as seamlessness, style, integration, and just sheer awesomeness, I'm sorry, but you can't. Show me a phone. to put up next to an iPhone that's like an iPhone. There is nothing. There's no iPhone killer.
Get lost.
There's a whole bunch of other phones that are pretty cool, but they're not iPhones. I'm sorry.
I have the Samsung S7 Edge, and it wipes the
floor. It takes you half an hour just to say the name.
Oh.
iPhone. See how fast that is?
S7 Edge.
Just so you know which one you're using. It's like a paragraph, just so I know which phone you're using.
Well, you know what? On that, after such a seamless episode where technology has proven its worth time and time again, let us thank the listeners for listening, because especially this week, it is going to be a gargantuan effort to edit. So any Integ We Trust listeners out there that have made it to the end of this podcast, I want to personally thank you from the depths of my heart.
Oh, yeah. And please send us a tweet and let us know that you actually listened to the end.
You know what? I've got a tear in my eye saying that. But no, thanks for listening, and Android for the win.